Monos. Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Appreciate their sponsorship. And of the some of the promos and events, I was just checking my phone there because top of the show, and again, thanks to our friends at Gulfstream, top of the show, going to try to make contact with Brian Edo, and we tried him a couple of times and weren't making contact, but I was just checking my phone. Sounds like for the guys in the control room, he's ready. He said yesterday he may be bouncing around the backstretch, so maybe the reception wasn't good because we tried him a couple of times. But we'll plug him in here at the top of the show, our colleague Brian Edo, who is down at the fairgrounds. Big day down there. A little bit later on, we'll be joined by Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, and Countdown to the Crown. We'll get some of Jeremy's thoughts on today's Louisiana Derby, but also some of the three-year-old Derby prep races over the past couple of weeks as well, as that is the purview of Countdown to the Crown. Me, I'm wearing my Syracuse tie. Yesterday, one of the best weekends of the year with the NCAA tournament and horse racing and the tournament and whatnot, always a lot of fun. And so appreciated last night's victory by Syracuse, certainly. That was a lot of fun. But again, going to talk a little Louisiana Derby and beyond, some nice stakes races. I believe, if I heard correctly in my ear, we may be joined now by Brian Edo. Brian, good morning.
Hey, you got me?
I got you. Do you have me?
I do. I am here. What's happening?
Perfect. I said at the top of the show, we heard from you a little bit earlier on the handicappers report, but with the absolutely busy weekend, we had pre-taped that. But I wanted to get at least a little live look and some boots on the ground to kind of lead into the big day at Fairgrounds. And again, you're very busy, so we'll just keep you briefly. But I did want to, kind of touch base. And first and foremost, just give us a little update on what the weather looks like Saturday down in New Orleans.
Whoa, it's cool, Seth. It's about 50 degrees. I think we're supposed to get up to 61, 62 degrees. It's overcast right now. The sun was rumored to be making a cameo. I'm a little hesitant about that now, but it will be dry. We'll have a fast main track. If you saw the races yesterday, it was very, very fast yesterday. We were off the turf yesterday, so it remains to be seen what the course condition will be today. The rails are at 0 feet. We will 100% be on the turf. We're just awaiting the course condition. But, yeah, all systems go here in New Orleans today.
Let's again. You talked about some of this a little bit earlier, but I just wanted to touch on the two highlights. Great stakes card, and so we're not hitting on all the stakes, but I want to hit a little Derby and Oaks, and I'll start with the Derby. And I saw you made a new friend with Mandaloon. I saw on Twitter you were having a little session with Mandaloon on the backstretch recently. So give me some of your thoughts. The big three coming out of the Risen Star, obviously, are the three you have to concentrate on this afternoon in the Louisiana Derby. I like Mandaloon on our stakes preview. Mike Callahan like Proxy. Give us some of your thoughts on the Louisiana Derby.
Well, as my partner in crime off the air, you couldn't quite hear him. He quipped that I wouldn't go that far, that I made friends with Mandaloon, but we got to know him a little bit. I do like Mandaloon. I just think he's better, Seth. I do like Proxy as well. I think the blinkers will help him. Everybody saw it last time in the Risen Star when he clearly lost focus entering the far turn, and John Velasquez had to get into him, so Mike Stidham puts blinkers on today. Mike has said since day one, since I've gotten down here that this is the race. A mile and 3/16 is the race where everybody will be playing Proxy's game. And I do agree with him. I still think Mandaloon's too much racehorse, but there's a stone cold punch exacta for me, Mandaloon over Proxy in our Derby here.
And again, just wanted to touch on one more, and that's the Oaks, because I am really looking forward to it. This has the, you know, shaping up to be an old time rivalry. It's the rubber match between Clairiere and Travel Column. Each has had one victory. Travel Column last year as a 2-year-old at Churchill. Clairiere last time right here at the fairgrounds in the Rachel Alexander. We're going to watch the ding-dong stretch battle between those two in the Rachel as they come down the stretch. I've liked Clairiere throughout the career. I got to jump on her again this afternoon. But give me some of your thoughts in the fairgrounds Oaks today.
Well, you know, Joe and I have said it all along, and Joe especially, you know, you don't see many rivalries in racing, and we're really playing this up, and rightfully so. They'll meet today for the third time, and knock on wood, all things being equal and all things moving forward, they'll meet for the fourth time on the last Friday in April. I think today, Travel Column really, Seth, gets all the best of it. You look at this race on paper, and it's a very paceless race, and I think that is going to be really to her benefit quite a bit, because Clairiere closed from last time while Travel Column got caught in a little tricky spot chasing a pretty fast pace. And Florent Giroux, you know, is, do I go? Do I wait? If I don't go, do I run the risk of not making first run? So he went, and it probably in hindsight, in theory, it might have just took a little bit out of Travel Column. And when you have two evenly matched horses like Travel Column and Clairiere, that was the difference. I think she'll be tighter today. I think the race flow really helps her today. So I think she will turn the tables on Clairiere today. With that being said, Seth, I mean, that is my pick. If, you know, contrarians or people that don't like to play favorites, this is a Fairgrounds Oaks where you're going to have two horses probably in the 8-5 and 9-5 range. They really aren't, I don't care what kind of figures you use, Seth, they are really no faster than anyone else in the race. So you are allowed to get creative if you like to take the contrarian view, if you like to go price shopping. There are several in there that check that box, because as good as we all think Clairiere and Travel Column is, they do not have a decided edge on paper.
And that's a great segue into how I wanted to wind things up. I'd like you to set us up a little bit on the wagering menu on the day, and if you're picking those spots to find value or narrow down a little bit, that's going to play into the late picks on a 14 race card. There's going to be some all stakes action that will be a lot of fun this afternoon.
Yeah, without a doubt, we're estimating these late all stakes pick 5 and 4 at 750, $750,000, and Seth, I don't see any reason why, you know, we won't be talking about a seven-figure pool. I think, me personally, at least, you spread early, you condense late, because the Benson Race 10 to me is wide, wide open. Even the New Orleans Classic is wide open, Seth. Just for a note for everybody listening live, we are almost positive that Captivating Moon will come out of the New Orleans Classic. He will run in the Mervyn Muniz. So I think those two first races are the spreads, and then things get a lot more likely to play to form with a turf horse like Colonel Liam. And then I mentioned the Travel Columns at Clairiere's, and me personally, you know, I guess I get lucky in a sense that I have such a strong opinion on Mandaloon, because maybe the Louisiana Derby to other people, you know, is a spread race. To me, I get a little some benefit in that I don't have to spread that deep, and that's how I'll construct my ticket, Seth.
Yeah, Mike Callahan and I went over the pick 5 sequence, which starts in race 10 with that Benson. We went over that sequence on the stakes preview this week, and I will toss out, Mike picked up a clever trip replay in the stall with Joy Epifora, who's 15-1 on the morning line. I didn't use that one, but when he pulled up the replay, that horse does get stopped pretty badly in the stall, and that may be a performance worth if folks want to go back and look on their own if they didn't see it this morning. So, yeah, that may be a race to Benson where you spread a little bit. Owendale is in the mix, but I don't think he's invincible by any means. And you mentioned Colonel Liam. Before I let you go, I'd love to know your opinion on that horse, because I'm not totally convinced, so I tilted a little towards cross-border. I wasn't convinced on Colonel Liam in the Pegasus turf. He did it there. He can do it again this afternoon. I have him right underneath, but I took a little shot against. But what are your thoughts on Colonel Liam?
Just quickly, because I know Joe likes Joy Epifora too, and it is a race to watch because there was trouble late in our stall memorial, and a lot of those horses are back in today. So, yes, yeah, Seth, give that one a look. You know, Seth, you said it perfectly with Colonel Liam. I don't know if I just bobbed and weaved the wrong way with him. I thought he was a crazy underlay in the Pegasus World Cup. He was like the 10th fastest horse in the race, but he won, and he looked pretty good doing it. He is legitimately something to five in here, 6 or 7 to 5, but again, he doesn't lay over this field. A horse like Cross Border wasn't far out of it. A horse like Pixelate was only beaten 3 lengths. If he can work out a trip, you know, he is in the mix here as well. A horse like Peace Achieve is improving and going forward. Third start of his form cycle off a layoff for Mark Cassie and his local assistant, David Carroll. So there, Seth, it's a race where you are definitely allowed to go a different direction if you want to try to beat a horse who will be a very short favorite in a very big field. And you and I know, and everybody else knows, how turf racing can work.
Yeah, and again, late pick five, all stakes pick five starts in race 10 this afternoon, race 11 and all stakes pick four, expecting big pools in both on really a great stakes day. So again, Brian, I'll let you get back to work because I know it is a busy time down there, and say hello to Joe and wish Joe and John Dooley good luck. We've enjoyed watching you guys throughout the Meet the Pregame show and the paddock commentary and whatnot, and we will be tuned in with much excitement this afternoon. So wishing everybody down there a great day at the fairgrounds.
Seth, I appreciate it. Best of luck to you as well, everyone back home, and we'll catch up soon.
Very good. Brian Addo live from the fairgrounds on their exclamation point on the meet, wrapping it up with the Louisiana Derby at the end of today's card. Still not a week of racing down there, but this obviously is the big day. Really looking forward to it today. All right, we'll head to a break. When we come back, as I promised a little earlier, we'll be joined by Jeremy Plonk, Countdown to the Crown, HorsePlayerNow.com, and more. We'll talk Louisiana Derby with Jeremy and also go back and recap some of the three-year-old Derby prep action from the past couple of weeks. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. As promised before the break, we are joined now by our friend Jeremy Plonk, HorsePlayerNow.com, Countdown to the Crown, and much, much more. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning. It was nice to hear Brian's voice, too. I haven't seen him in a while, and he's down at Fairgrounds doing great work down there. So a good daily double combo this morning here. Happy to follow up Brian, for sure.
Speaking of daily double, I have to ask. It's that time of year. You have anybody you're rooting for in the tournament?
I'm very collegiate here. I've got my Sooner shirt on today. I'm a proud Oklahoma grad. We played today against Missouri, an old Big 8 rival. I covered a lot of Missouri-Oklahoma games back in the day when they had Anthony Peeler and Doug Smith and Norm Stewart, their coach back in the day. This is our first tournament since the passing of the late, great Billy Tubbs, a dear friend of mine from when I was in school there and treated me so well. So Billy had that famous moment against Missouri, if you remember, where they were throwing stuff on the floor and the ref said, "Can you please talk to the crowd and get them to settle down?" And Billy gets on the microphone and says, "Please don't throw anything on the floor, no matter how damn bad the officiating is." And he got teed up and thrown out of the game. So a little history today as Missouri and Oklahoma meet up again. Hopefully Lon Kruger doesn't get tossed from the game, though.
That's right. Well, I am wearing my Syracuse tie in honor of last night's victory. I said on Twitter last night, "Tune into the show tomorrow. Maybe I'll paint my face orange." I wasn't that bold, but I wore the tie.
I saw your tweet. Good for you, and good for the Qs. Wow, I mean, Jim Boeheim gets him ready for the tournament somehow. I'm not sure how he does it, but, boy, he had him ready to play last night.
That was nuts last night. Buddy Boeheim, you talk about in the zone. That kid was in the zone. He was just getting the ball. It was like he didn't even have to look. It was going in. It was insane. All right, let's get back to some horse racing. Before we talk derby preps and whatnot, though, I'll just set you up to talk a little horseplayernow.com because I know via my email – you've got a little Louisiana Derby, a little Fairgrounds package that's available if folks want to jump on horseplayernow.com.
Yeah, our buzz report that we do every Saturday, myself and Brian W. Spencer, we take a look at two full tracks. Brian's taking a look at Louisiana Derby Day today with the full card. I've got Gulfstream. We also have playbooks for tracks around the country, Oak Lawn, Aqueduct, Santa Anita. So full coverage, $10 on the buzz report every Saturday. We put that out, and we've been on a pretty good run of late, but we're looking for some big winners today. It's been a little chalky down at Gulfstream of late, so let's hopefully we can get some prices down there in Florida. And I think we'll get some prices at Fairground throughout the course of the day. Maybe not in the big races, right? A lot of times on these big stakes days, you get big favorites, and they rule the roost at the higher levels sometimes. But I think on a 14-race card at Fairgrounds, we'll be able to unearth a couple big gems throughout the course of the day.
Yeah, you would think so. The undercard features some maiden races that are kind of intriguing, and I think there's the possibility even a couple of stakes races for some horses to maybe upset the apple cart a little bit. I'm not sure about the two highlights, the Oaks and the Derby, but let's get some thoughts on the Derby right now. Louisiana Derby, going to go back, watch the stretch run of the Risen Star, because I think these three are going to take most of the action. And I like Mandaloon. I've liked them throughout. I had said before the last race, I was kind of comparing him to Tis the Law in that his third place finish prior to the Risen Star, I thought maybe set him up first time around two turns that time. I thought he would improve. He did. So Mandaloon's the number 11. Number two is Proxy. Number six is Midnight Bourbon. They run 1-2-3 in the Risen Star. They're back on Saturday afternoon. I'm going to stick with Mandaloon. I'm sticking 1-2-3, just the way they came under the wire, and then putting Hot Rod Charlie underneath in the mix as maybe a horse to look at if you're really searching for an alternative. But I've liked Mandaloon right along. I'll stick with him. Your thoughts on the Louisiana Derby?
Well, the key again is Right and Just. You know, he's in the two hole. He was the speed last time from the far outside, and he went a much faster pace in the Risen Star than the horses who came out of the Compton scene. And that's when Midnight Bourbon was able to control the pace and go wire to wire. Mandaloon ended up third, and between them was Proxy. Now, when they came back into Risen Star, Right and Just was the new face, and he went faster. And that changed the dynamic of the race, certainly for Midnight Bourbon. Proxy was the horse who kind of ran his same race. I like the late pace figures from Brisk quite a bit, because that's, you know, like what's left in the tank. It's not jockey intent. It's not situational where they back the speed up. Your late pace figures what you got left in the tank and what you're running on the back end of the race. And the horse who held his late pace figure best from the LeCompte to the Risen Star was actually Proxy. He just kept running his race. And he's not particularly fast, but he just runs the same tempo the whole way. So while other horses are faster than him early, and some may, you know, rally from farther back in the pack. He just kind of runs his 24-second quarter every single time. And then some are going to come back to him in the right pace situation. And at other times, you know, he'll be able to look like he's forging and blowing by him. That could be the situation here, because as we stretch out another 16th of a mile to a mile and 3/16, he definitely has the pedigree for it. I don't think there's a horse in the crop I trust more at a mile and a quarter or longer than Proxy. I think he's really got the setup and the pedigree for it and the right running style. He's just going to keep grinding. Since the LeCompte, I've said he is the Belmont Stakes winner. We've seen what the Tappets do in the Belmont. They've really dominated over the last 10 years. His damn panty raid was really good at a mile and an eighth, and she could have run farther than that if there were races for the distaffers, really, for her to attack in that division. So I really think that Proxy is a Belmont Stakes kind of horse. If this race is kind of run like a Belmont, he can win it. The blinker's on, I think, you know, I heard Brian mention about, you know, how he fell back on the turn and Velasquez had to kind of get in the bike and start pedaling again to get him going. I think the blinkers are for like that point in the race. I don't think he's the kind of horse that you want up in the pace a little bit more. And it's not, I don't think, to keep him focused in the stretch. He's not going to hit another gear in the stretch. He's just going to keep at that gear. But I think the blinkers are to say run 24 every single quarter. Don't have that loping quarter in the middle where you drop back a little bit. And I think Proxy's got a good shot in here. Mandaloon is the most brilliant horse in the Louisiana Derby. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But the most brilliant horse doesn't win all the time. And if you're going to take, I think he's going to be 4-5.
Yeah.
I really do believe they're going to bet Mandaloon that hard in the Louisiana Derby. Remember, he was 4-5 in the LeCompte off the layoff. Everybody thought he was the nuts. Then when he got beat, he was still the favorite in the Risen Star, but he drifted up to 2-1. After winning the Risen Star, I think he goes back to being about a 4-5 shot in this race. Now, is he 4-5 compared to Proxy or compared to Midnight Bourbon? He's the most brilliant horse in the race, but I don't think he's like 4-5 versus 4-1. And if you can get somewhere in that ballpark, 7-2, 4-1, 9-2 on Proxy, he's the bet for me. And that's the way I'm attacking the race. I'll take Proxy on top, but Mandaloon is obviously a major contender in there. I'll be surprised if it's not one of those two, though. It's a two-deep situation for multi-race wagers. But as Brian mentioned, if you've got an opinion on one of the horses over the other, you really are at an advantage, because if somebody goes too deep in this race, half their combinations on their ticket automatically are guaranteed to lose. I mean, that's just the way it is between going too deep in one race versus singling. So the advantage is to just, you know, fish, cut bait, and go with one of the two. But it looks like it has to be one of those two. But I'm going to lean towards Proxy. But if you get beat by Mandaloon and you hit the other four legs of pick five, that's a pretty sick way to get beat, because you know Mandaloon is probably the best horse in the race. But I'm going with Proxy at a mile and 3/16.
Very good. And I love the mile and 3/16. Fairgrounds, I think, made a great move, because it starts to give you a real barometer for Derby horses.
Yeah, and they went to a mile and an eighth in the Risen Star, right? So that's an earlier distance than a lot of these horses. They were doing it in February, whereas a mile and an eighth for a lot of the Derby horses, they won't get there until April. So I do agree. I think it was a good move for the series. The series has produced some very solid horses in the last several years towards the Triple Crown and a lot of top three type finishers and horses who have run well. So the profile of the Louisiana Derby series has definitely been on the rise in the last 5-6 years.
Let's get to some of the Derby preps from the past few weeks since we've talked to you last. And I'll start things out by just going to last week and the Rebel. And I looked, and looking at your top 10 at Countdown to the Crown. And let me reiterate, Countdown to the Crown, I, for regular viewers, they're aware. But Jeremy and the team put together a great package that comes out every Friday, a nice printable sheet if you want to do that. You can read it on the phone or the computer as well, though. Looking forward to some of the stakes races coming up, looking back at some of the stakes and allowance races as we get closer. It concentrates a little more on stakes, but you have a top 20 list there as well. It's a great way to kind of follow the lead up to the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown Trail. But your current top 20 that was put out yesterday, Concert Tour at number 2. So I'm assuming we're going to look at the stretch run here of the Rebel, where Concert Tour is the number 7 winning over Hoosier, number 3. It was a Baffert exact. A Big Lake runs third. We'll talk about Big Lake a little later on, the two horse that you were kind of impressed with as well. So folks can take a look at that one also running third. But again, that he hits number 2 on your top 20, I'm assuming you were impressed by the Rebel performance from Concert Tour.
Two things. One, I was impressed by Concert Tour. And two, I'm being overwhelmed by Bob Baffert. You know, I mean, it's he's just winning everything. And even when you question one of his horses, like I wasn't sure Concert Tour was a route horse going into that race. And then he emphatically wins the way he did. And he put away Caddo River, who was a pretty nice horse. And Caddo River just backed up totally out of it. When you see Baffert not only win, but run 1-2, you know, Spielberg ran second behind the champion when he came east behind Essential Quality when he came east for the Southwest Stakes. So, like, everywhere you look, Bob Baffert is just killing it. He's running 1-2 at Santa Anita with everything. He's won 9 of the last 10 major preps in Southern California towards the Derby, going back to Roadster's 2019 Santa Anita Derby. They can't beat him right now. Whatever the case, whatever your opinion is of him, whether you think he's a super trainer or you don't like the positives that his horses have gotten in recent years and things like that, I get all those arguments. There was a point in 2019 where I just said, to hell with it. Maximum Security is the horse to win the Kentucky Derby. I don't care what I think about Jason Service. I don't care what I think about, you know, this is going to happen or that's going to happen. I just have to look at what's been happening in the races, and nobody's going to beat Maximum Security. And it was true. You know, he ran away with the Kentucky Derby. If not for the incident on the far turn, he wins the Derby by daylight. So I'm at that point with Bob Baffert right now in that they just can't beat him. That nobody has the answer to beating him in these races. So Concert Tour was like, I think 11 or 12 last week for me coming into the Rebel Stakes. And I jumped him all the way up behind Life is Good. And Life is Good is propelled to the number one spot, because until somebody proves they have an answer for what Baffert is doing, you've got to lean to him. And so I've got him 1-2 right now with his top two. And then I've got Essential Quality and Greatest Honor, the obvious other horses that would be in anybody's top four. Mandaloon, Proxy, depending on how you like them, the Louisiana Derby, they sit right there next. And that's kind of where this division makes a cut. And beyond that, you know, there's a pretty big separation. Whoever wins the Louisiana Derby today is going to join Essential Quality and Greatest Honor, you know, the horses that are headed towards the Bluegrass and the Florida Derby. And then Life is Good and Concert Tour for Baffert is a very clear-cut top five. Unless something weird happens in the Louisiana Derby where there's a big upset today, I think we're going to have a very defined top five after this afternoon.
Yeah, you just kind of said it, but I'll reiterate. I was you know, I knew it as the races were being run, but I hadn't seen it in black and white like this and thought about it. But, yeah, Baffert, not just winning these prep races, he's running 1-2 in four of them, the Sham, the San Vicente, yes, the San Felipe, and the Rebel. He ran 1-2 in those races. But more mind-boggling, and I said it last week, we do a podcast now. And last Friday, in honor of the Rebel, I did a trivia question leading into the Rebel. I said, of the last 12 runnings of the Rebel, how many has Bob Baffert won? He'd won 7 of 12. He's now 8 for 13 in the Rebel, yeah, which if it's a guy's home track, that's still an incredible record.
Right.
But then he ships to do it. He's 8 for 13 of the last 13 runnings. It's just incredible.
Yeah, and look, you know, maybe this year it worked in his favor a little bit because of the weather delays in February and horses like Keep Me in Mind weren't up to snuff in the Rebel Stakes. I think that's fair to say. No horse probably suffered more from that weather delay at Oakland than Keep Me in Mind, because it threw him off schedule. Then they decided to skip the Southwest and go to the Rebel instead. So they go a little bit later into the season, a mile and a 16th, first time back. And, you know, everything worked out for Baffert, you know, again, because he was coming from Southern California where nobody missed a single day. Shows up, boom, off the plane, like the old D-Wayne off the plane days. And, you know, I've been following this game for a long time professionally, and I was working in the game back when Lucas was dominating in the early and mid-90s. You know, that's kind of where I got my start in racing professionally. So I've seen this before. You know, remember when Lucas won, what was it, 6 straight Triple Crown races, 7 straight Triple Crown races, 94 to 96 through that run until Louis Couture finally beat him and Nick Zito in the Preakness of 96. I mean, this is kind of where we are with Baffert right now. And it doesn't matter where he goes. And like back then, Lucas was winning all the preps too, right? I mean, if it wasn't one horse in the Florida Derby, it was another in Arkansas and another in the Bluegrass. We're back to that again, but it might even be more successful this time. And Lucas had an unbelievable expansive operation with assistance at all the different circuits. Baffert's doing it out of one barn. He's doing it out of one, like, 48-horse barn operation in Southern California with his assistant trainer, Jimmy Barnes, going on the road for him. You know, Bob's not traveling as much since he had the heart attack in Dubai years ago. He'll travel for the very big events, but for most of like the regional prep races and such, he just leaves it in the hands of Jimmy Barnes, and the show just keeps rolling on. I mean, I don't know where it stops because it hasn't anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, throw a couple Triple Crown winners in the mix there as well. It's been a phenomenal run over the past few years, certainly for Baffert, which a great segue to Life is Good. You mentioned it already. He hit the top of your list. The last time we talked, I think you had him sitting maybe fifth or sixth.
Yeah.
And we had the conversation, and you said, I don't deny this is a brilliant horse. I'm not sure he's a Derby mile and a quarter horse. But subsequently, to watch the stretch run of San Felipe, Life is Good as the number one horse. He throws in this performance with a gaudy triple-digit buyer, and I'm assuming off of this, and again, the Baffert juggernaut kind of forced you to move him up the list.
Right. If he's not trained by Bob Baffert, he's probably still four or five on my list. I don't like the drift at the end of the race,
yeah.
At the end of the San Felipe. It's not a tired horse, per se. I think it's more of a physical issue. And look, I'm not a veterinarian. I'm not a trainer. I'm not a horseman. But I am an observer of races. And I've seen a lot of good horses over the years do things that were a little bit off. And then all of a sudden, they're off the trail, and we don't see them again. In fact, you know, this is something that truly happened back in 2008. I was watching the races of Eight Bells from Oaklawn. And she had this tendency to just kind of jerk her head in the stretch like this. And, like, it was very strange to me. And I went to Larry Jones the week of the Kentucky Derby when she was entered. And I said, Larry, have you changed the equipment on her? Is there something going on with her or whatever? And he didn't want to talk about it, you know. He brushed me off and was like, you know, don't ask me stuff like that. And then something happens to her after the race. I'm not saying I predicted it was going to happen or anything like that, but when horses give you signs that they're not running straight and they're not doing things that are part of the normal course and culture of running, they're giving you some tips and some signs. So I don't know what it would be necessarily, and I'm not predicting doom and gloom for Life is Good, and I certainly don't want to give that impression. And nor was I for Eight Bells back in her day. But they do raise red flags and they do raise concerns. It could be something as simple as changing a bit in the way, you know, the bit fits in the horse's mouth and the way they steer them, you know. It could be as simple as that. But it could be something as major as there's, you know, a physical issue going on, you know. They're big animals. They're 1,000 pounds plus. Their weight gets distributed from the left side to the right side, the way they change leads. If a horse has something wrong on one side, it's going to show up on the other, like they, you know, they move out. And in the head-on, I didn't love the stretch run for Life is Good. His hind end was kind of, you know, fishtailed out behind him. The other horses you see, they're straight, you know. You look at a head-on replay, and the horse looks straight going. This horse's hind end was like this coming down the lane. And so that's not looking at the tote board and seeing the image. I'm a little concerned about that. But again, Bob Baffert has all the answers. And until they beat him, and until I can't physically say I think something's wrong with the horse, I just speculate. And so I would have had him four or five if somebody else was the trainer. But I think Baffert will get it right. And this horse dominated. I mean, he absolutely dominated what we saw in the San Felipe. So if he is healthy and he runs in the Kentucky Derby and he gets that far, he's going to be very tough to beat. If he doesn't make it to the Kentucky Derby, you'll say, hey, I remember when that guy said something on Seth's show about a month ago. You know, I mean, because that's kind of where I'm at with him. If he makes the Derby, Baffert has made the changes and he knows what he's doing and all things are right. But if this horse doesn't make the Kentucky Derby, I won't be the most shocked guy observing the trail.
And on the schedule, we'll get another look at him as well.
Correct. Right. We've got the Santa Anita Derby to figure that out. He comes back in the Santa Anita Derby, works really good leading up to it, trains great, runs good, runs straight, that tail ends, you know, right on and true and good to go. He deserves to be the top horse in the Kentucky Derby. No question about that. It's interesting watching races and, like, reading the racing form. They're two different things. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I worked in TV with ESPN and NBC for years. The great Charles C. Caney, one of the best viewers of horse flesh I've ever seen in my life. The most telling moment we ever had on air. I was the stats and spotter for the on-air talent. So I would be delivering them numbers, facts, watching what goes on, helping them on the air while they're delivering the broadcast. When Repent won the Louisiana Derby in 2002 for Kenny McPeak, he did not finish the gallop out. And we went into a commercial, and Charles C. Caney turned to me and said, that horse will not make the Kentucky Derby. She knew. He had just won. And 10 steps after the wire, she turned to me and said, he will not make the Kentucky Derby. And everybody, you know, there was nothing physically wrong with him at the time. And nobody talked about it in the post-race interview or anything like that. But by the time it was time to run again, Repent was injured and off the Kentucky Derby trail. You know, she had an unbelievable eye for that. And learning and talking with people like that over the years and seeing how what you see on the track necessarily on the video and what you see in the past performances, there's another layer to it. And people who have really good eyes and observing that stuff can pick up on it. And she did. That was one of the moments I really remember. And it was, what, 19 years ago now, 2002. But she was dead on the money, and Repent did not make the Triple Crown that year, and he was on everybody's top three list at that point.
That's interesting, very interesting. And yeah, I do miss Charles C. Canny. She was, when I got in the game, she,
the greatest.
Frank Wright, and that whole group used to be fun to watch. Let's talk a little bit down your list, but going back a couple of weeks to some of the other Derby preps, I'd like some thoughts on Weyburn and Helium. And we're going to watch stretch runs from both of those. We'll start out talking a little Helium. And I thought these were two performances that were pretty similar. Both Weyburn in the Gotham and Helium in the Tampa Bay Derby got passed in the stretch and gutted it out and came back and won. And we're watching Helium here, the number 10 horse for Mark Cassie. And again, we'll get passed by Hidden Stash, who had every reason to go on by, but Helium just said no and comes back. So again, makes your top 20 at number 19. Now Weyburn's number 15. And you, talking to you in years past, you said, as we get to this point, part of what makes the list is they just now have enough points to be in the field, which is completely logical.
Right.
But I'm thinking I have, first we'll talk Helium, but then we'll hit a little on Weyburn as well. Both of these to me are a little bit dicey. Weyburn, I question whether he'll even wind up in the Derby, given the connections and whatnot. And here we're seeing Weyburn again on the inside, coming back for Jimmy Jerkins. Easy to root for Jimmy Jerkins. But again, getting back to Helium and Mark Cassie, Mark has said, it sounds like they're going with Helium, but Mark has said he's not really planning a prep. I cannot pull a trigger on a horse this lightly raced going from the Tampa Derby to the Kentucky Derby. That to me seems like a huge leap.
Yeah, not just, you know, the Tampa Derby to the Kentucky Derby, that distance. The fact this horse didn't run prior to the Tampa Derby, dating all the way back to, you know, some races at Woodbine going short in the fall. So there's no foundation there. There's one three-year-old start. It's a mile and a 16th under lightweight. You know, they don't stack them up in the Tampa Bay Derby against very suspect competition. It was a bad renewal of Sam F. Davis. There was no big Pletcher heavy hitter this year to come in from the Tampa Bay Derby. So he didn't beat much. He did not beat much in the Tampa Bay Derby. He did it under a lightweight at 116 pounds with no other foundation. If Mark can gallop this horse for 6, 7, 8 weeks between up to the Kentucky Derby and get two or three works into him and win the Kentucky Derby, it'll be the greatest training feat he's had in his career. And he won 2/3 of the Triple Crown 2 years ago. You know, he won back-to-back races with War of Will, and he won with Sir Winston, you know, the Preakness and the Belmont back-to-back. So he's won two of the last five Triple Crown races, and this would be his greatest training feat of his career if he's able to pull it off with Helium. There's just not enough foundation there. This is a classic example of, we get to the Derby in 2020, 2021, whereas in 1990, maybe up to about 2000, we were trying to train to have a horse ready to win the Derby. They have given up that chase. Almost every trainer, maybe except Bob Baffert, and maybe that's why Bob Baffert's owning these things in recent years, everybody else is just trying to get there. And he's trying to win it, and that's a difference. And you're going to lose horses along the wayside when you do that, when you run them hard and you train them hard and things like that. But just getting there is not enough. And this horse, Helium, is just trying to get there. He's got the qualifying points, you know, with the Tampa Bay Derby, worth 50. So he makes the top 20. Yeah. Like you said, that's, you know, you've handicapped the handicapper, correct. And that's why he's in there. But that's why he's in at number 19. You know, he's at the bottom of the list you know, I will almost guarantee you he'll be number 20 by the time we get through to Derby Day. He'll be the last horse on my list. I cannot see myself liking him over anybody in the Kentucky Derby based on that schedule. So he is a rank outsider to me. Weyburn, the question is, you know, what did he beat in the Gotham? I think he beat a better field in the Gotham with those Chads behind him than what was in the Tampa Bay Derby. I think he's got a better route pedigree and a little bit better foundation under him. He's got a distance trainer in Jimmy Jerkins. Mark Cassie can get a horse at distance, of course, too. That's not really a plus in the column of Wayburn over Helium. But I do like the fact that, you know, Jimmy Jerkins gets a round horse. Now, again, I said I've been around a long time. 1994, I was at the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs when Jimmy's dad, Alan, the chief, the great one, had Sky Beauty, the all-timer of New York distaffers, running that year in the Breeders' Cup distaff. And she ran terrible. And I remember Alan Jerkins after the race saying, I'm never coming back to Churchill Downs again. I mean, and I think he stuck to it. I don't know if he ever ran a horse again. The Jerkins don't like the ship, right? I mean, they like to run where they're at. If they're in Florida, they'll run in Florida. If they're in New York, they'll run in New York. But they don't put them on planes and vans very often and go around looking for spots to run. So like you said, will Wayburn even get to the Derby? He would probably have to win the Wood Memorial and, you know, to move on to the Derby. You know, if he were run second or third in the Wood, I think Jimmy Jerkins would say, ah, no Derby for him. You know, we'll point towards Saratoga in the summer. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like I said, some people are just trying to get to the Kentucky Derby. The Jerkins family's not in that list.
Yeah, I had Dave Grenig on the day after the Gotham, and he was kind of speculating that the connections didn't have a lot of buzz immediately after the race of Derby. But you would guess Wood Memorial next. And if you win that, maybe your hand is almost forced and they wind up in the Derby. But otherwise, like he was speculating, Peter Pan maybe in Belmont. Yeah, Saratoga.
Yeah, Peter
in the
Pan,
summer.
Belmont, yeah. Right. And then gear up for Saratoga and then, you know, try to have a good 4-year-old, right? Jockey Club Gold Cup towards, you know, well, Jockey Club Gold Cup Saratoga this year. So you don't have that fall race, but to springboard you into four. But, you know, Jimmy Jerkins and I think he's probably more apt to develop a good older horse than he is to push one to the Triple Crown. So, but if he wins the Wood and looks really good doing it, there are only three ones, right? And you'll probably want to give him a shot. But the way the top four or five in this division look, do you want to go somewhere as the sixth choice at best?
Yeah.
That'll be the question for him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that both of those play out. As I say, Helium, to me, if they wind up at that – that leap, three starts, I can't. But Wayburn, yeah. It'd be interesting to see what they decide to do with that one again. And that decision, I think, will be a little firmer after that. Wayburn will have another start. All right, let's talk about just a couple others before we wrap
sure.
up. And when I got in touch with you yesterday about coming on today, you mentioned a horse that is sitting now in your top 10 at number 10, Big Lake. You thought was interesting. And again, we'll watch the replay of the Risen Star. The Rebel. Yeah, the Rebel replay,
yeah.
Which I mentioned earlier, where Big Lake winds up running third in there. Give me your thoughts on Big Lake and the, you know, coming off of this third place performance last time.
Well, he gets sold off about the 16th pole by a tiring horse in front of him who comes out. He ends up finishing in front of that horse, so there's no objection or disqualification or any of that kind of post-race talk about it. But he clearly would have been second in this race. Spielberg benefited coming up the inside with the clean trip, but Big Lake was second best, and he ran well in that race. Remember, he ran was it the Risen Star Day or the LeCompte? He ran on the undercard against Defeater in an allowance race. I think it was Risen Star Day. And he ran a race that was very comparable to what they did later on the card. And I'll tell you, Defeater, the horse who he beat in that race, came out of it injured, the horse Big Lake beat. But Defeater is a serious racehorse. They went 1-2 in that allowance race, which I think was probably the best allowance race we've seen in the country. There haven't been a lot of three-year-old allowance races this year. But that Big Lake Defeater race at Fairgrounds back in February was really, really good. And it was a tip forward that Big Lake has some ability. And the horses that he beat in the Rebel, when you think Caddo River, Keep Me in Mind, Get Her Number, horses like that were well behind Big Lake in this spot. And Big Lake ran very well. Steve Asmussen's always got a couple horses at the beginning of the year, and then they start to wind themselves down and whittle down. So by the time it's Derby time, Steve has one, maybe two at the most. Big Lake could be the one moving the right direction for Asmussen, which is a little bit different for his barn. You know, his barn usually comes out flying and top of the marquee like we see with Midnight Bourbon in January, right? And then as they get a little bit longer and further down the line, Steve's horses usually kind of come back to the pack a little bit and are like middling horses for the Kentucky Derby when they make the field. This one is an ascending type, and I'm interested to see what Big Lake does next. I think they'll try to get another race into him. And so Will that be back in the Arkansas Derby? That would make the most amount of sense. It could be to the Bluegrass. Of course, Steve supports the racing there in Kentucky. But I think Big Lake, with the top two finish in his final prep race, will get in on points and will be an interesting long shot. A horse who can finish, a horse who has pedigree to go long. Now, Asmussen has not had success in the Kentucky Derby, right? He's got that giant over on his back there. He's won the other two legs of the Triple Crown, of course, the Preakness and the Belmont, but he hasn't won a Derby yet. And I think that, you know, Big Lake's not going to win a Kentucky Derby for him, I don't think. But if you're looking for a horse right now who is that commanding curve, the golden soul, the long shot who's going to hit the board somewhere in the Kentucky Derby and blow up your tries and supers, they can't run Baffert, Baffert, Baffert. I guess they could. But if you're going to break up the Baffert Brigade and the heavy favorites and Shug's horse, Big Lake to me is that horse who's going to look like a 20-30-1 shot on Derby Day. He's got to run one more race yet where he runs, you know, I think a good second place finish in Arkansas or at Keeneland, something like that, sets him up as being the Derby closer who gets a piece of it. So I'm excited about him at this point.
Yeah, he was 18-1 and ran third in that Rebel last week. And I will mention I had Rick Hammerly on last Saturday morning, the racing director at Oaklawn, and he talked about Big Lake as a possible upsetter in there. So it was a nice performance at 18-1 to get up in the mix. Finally, before we let you go, Jeremy, I want to talk about one more. Big Lake was number 10 in your top 20. Number nine is Prevalence. And Prevalence, after I was in doing the our afternoon handicapping show the day he won the maiden debut effort, and I was in last week when, after a little bit of a delay, he had a little bit of a setback and missed some training, so it was a little bit of delay for the second start. I didn't think the second start was as impressive visually as the first start, but he won, and you want some gas in the tank for that race where you need the points, and that's going to be the game plan. They're now, I think, looking potentially Arkansas Derby or Wood Memorial for Prevalence. But again, off the first couple of starts, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I agree with you. The second start wasn't as good as the first, but there's a reason for that. He missed the training time, right? Yeah. He was out with a fever. He missed the start. You know, these horses are supposed to work every 6-7 days on pattern. This is what they do. And then they take a day off after the workout, and then they come back galloping, right? And then they gallop up to the next workout, and they repeat the pattern. I mean, this is why there's training. They call it training for, you know, it's not called exercise. It's called training. They get in a pattern and a regiment, and this is what they're supposed to do and work up to a race the right way and the way that the trainer wants them to progress. He didn't get that for that last race. So he won that race off his pattern, off his training. And yes, he wasn't as impressive as the first start. But if you saw that first start and you don't think this is one of the more talented three-year-olds, then you haven't watched enough races, I don't think. I mean, it was a really spectacular debut. He looked fantastic doing it. He looked great training before the debut. That's why he was a pick for us in our Buzz report and in Countdown to the Crown. We had mentioned this horse had been working really well. The works we can see at xbtv.com going into that debut. He's trained by Brendan Walson. That's why you got 6 or 7 to 1 on him in a debut, right? If he's trained by a bigger name trainer, a Pletcher or somebody like that, or a Chad Brown, off of those works, he probably would have debuted at 7 to 5, but instead you got almost 7 to 1. So Prevalence is as talented as many of the horses in this crop. He's got one chance to prove it, to make the Kentucky Derby. And again, if he can, will that be enough? Will that be enough foundation, just the three starts, debuting in late January like that, to win a Kentucky Derby? Probably not. So even if he really runs a big race in his last prep, he's like number 9 now. He probably doesn't move up, like, in my mind, like for winning the Kentucky Derby. He probably doesn't move up more than a spot or two, you know, even if he goes and wins the Bluegrass, right? He's not going to jump up to be like number 2 or 3, because a three-starred horse like that who had some setbacks during the course of the campaign, I don't think he's going to be fit enough to win a Kentucky Derby. You know, they're against the clock. But can he get to the Derby, and can he beat a lot of these other horses who are going to be, you know, the 12th, 15th, 20th best horse in the race positively? You know, he might be the third most talented, second most talented horse. If he wins his final prep and does what I think he could do, he might be the second or third most talented horse in the crop. But I'd still probably pick him 6th or 7th, because the Derby is 126 pounds. It's 1.25 miles. It's an 18, 19, 20 horse field. There's a lot of physicality that goes into the Derby that a horse with only 3 starts and really only 1 serious race under his belt would be a reason to play against him. But he is going to be a major talent moving forward if he stays healthy, and he could be talented enough to win one of these final preps at 1.125. Don't write him off just because that last start wasn't as good as it might have looked to you. Look at the workout pattern between that start and what we have in his final race. XBTV will be able to check out his works down in Florida. You can see some of those on video. And also just look, you want to see him back 10 days probably. You're always looking 10 to 14 days after a race. You want to see a horse back on the workout tab. When they start getting past 14 days returning after a race, that means the last race took a little something out of them or there was a physical issue coming out of it. So with prevalence, I'd like to see it a little bit quicker because of the missed time. I'd like to see him back on the tab about 10 days or so after that last race and then working every 6-7 days on pattern and hopefully get a chance to see some of those videos of it as he goes towards that final prep. He's got one shot to get there. They are in a very tight window. If I owned and trained a horse, well, that would make me part of the Dauphin, and I wouldn't be talking to you this morning. I'd just be laying in a tent somewhere counting my millions. But I would tell you this. If he was my horse, I would say go to the Lexington at Keeneland at a mile and a 16th, avoid the major mile and an eighth prep, and then go to the Preakness in your fourth start. I would love to see Prevalence take that Lexington Preakness path, but I don't think they will.
And certainly the ownership group has some other options for the Derby, so...
Yeah, right. They've got Essential Quality. And, like, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I can tell you this right now. Say Essential Quality runs the Bluegrass and something happens. He runs terrible or comes up sore or sick or something after the race. You're going to hear how great Prevalence is going towards the Kentucky Derby. This is the way things work in this game. So the need for Prevalence for the Godolphin team will be based and predicated probably on what Essential Quality does.
You know, you mentioned...
And Proxy, I forgot. You know, Proxy is also the Dauphin. So, you know, I mean, they've got three options. They've got two other very good options right now that tell them they don't need the Force Prevalence, right? And so that's a good position for them to be in.
And we've mentioned Prevalence now, potentially three starts going into the Derby, Helium. I listened to Steve Haskin, of course, a longtime writer before he retired from the Blood Horse, and he had the Derby Dozen for years and years. So he's a guy that's been looking at the Derby for years. And he was on with Steve Bick a week and a half or so ago. He said, you know, the Derby has now become kind of a guessing game. It's a lot harder to handicap now than it was going back a few years because you have these horses that come in with three starts. And so it's kind of more of an unknown. You know, half of the field is almost unknown as far as talent and, you know, you see the raw talent, but you don't have that progression that you had going back of at least 7 or 8 starts. So you go back to Affirmed and Aladar, you had a real 2-year-old season. You never get that anymore.
Certainly, you used to have horses that beat each other and took turns beating each other too, right? So you got to the Derby, it was a little bit of a confusion. Like, you know, is it Thunder Gulch's turn or is it somebody else's turn? You know, they kind of took turns beating each other and they ran a lot more often. So. And you had pace in the Derby. You had the Houstons. You had the speed horses, the Trinibergs, and people like that running in the Derby that aren't there now because of the point system. So I actually disagree with Mr. Haskin on that one. I think the Derby's a lot easier to handicap now, and I think the statistics prove that out. Favorites have won it, what, something like 7 of the last 8 or 9 years? And you know, Maximum Security was the second pick and got DQ'd and taken down. Last year, you know, Tis the Law got beat, but if the Derby's running the traditional time slot, you know, I think Tis the Law probably mops the floor with them in May. So there hasn't been a lot of chaos in the Derby of late. So, I mean, there's less to look at. And if you want to use that as your basis for saying it's harder to handicap, there are less running lines to look at. But what we see is horses winning the Derby that have run the table, have won all their 3-year-old starts. I mean, that's kind of been like, to going back to California Chrome all the way through Maximum Security, and I'll always call Maximum Security the Derby winner from an analytical standpoint because, you know, Country House was just promoted up to the spot, but all those horses were undefeated as 3-year-olds. I mean, from California Chrome and Orb, actually, going back to Orb in 2013, he was the year before California Chrome. Orb did not lose as a 3-year-old. Chrome didn't lose as a 3-year-old, all the way up through Maximum Security. Now, last year, Authentic did lose the one race, but again, The Derby was run in September. Yeah. It's not kind of the same thing that we're looking at. If you want to look at the Belmont Stakes as the pseudo-Derby last year, you know, the first leg of the Triple Crown, that was won by another undefeated horse on the year, Tis the Law. So, I mean, these horses who have won the first leg of the Triple Crown going all the way back to 2013 have zero losses as 3-year-olds going into the race. That's unbelievable.
And you made a great point a little earlier when you kind of looked at the top 20 and we were kind of separating. And there are maybe 5 or 6 that are the top tier. And I totally agree with that. Because I said a couple of weeks ago with the future bet, I jumped in at all others. And I said, I think this field is not set enough to think I won't get maybe eight horses or more on my all others ticket, because once you get past the first four or five, it starts to become a little more fluid who's going to wind up in the Kentucky Derby, given the future pool field a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and the points thing is, he's never really been a big factor for the Derby. You know, it's kind of, it's a good talking point. It's kind of like the Associated Press football poll. It gets you talking about the games and the rankings and things like that. And that's its purpose, I think, more so than anything. And for Churchill to control the prep races and who gets there. But, you know, I don't know. I just don't see that with this year's crop, that there's going to be a lot of points to be had. You know, the top horses are going to win these 100-point races probably. I mean, who's going to beat Life is Good? Who's going to beat Concert Tour? Who's going to beat Essential Quality? If they are standouts, they take all the 100-pointers, right? So, like, the rest of the horses who are trying to get up to that 30, 40 plateau in points, they're going to have to do it by chipping away at the unders, right? And so I think there's going to be a lot of horses around 20, 30 points this year, because – we're not trading the victories around, right? Like we were talking about on the old trails, horses were beating each other, you know, and going back and forth. There's going to be four or five horses hoarding all the big points, and then everybody else is going for the smaller amounts, which means in that like 15 to 25 in the points rankings, there could be a lot of horses all around the same points, even more than usual around the bubble. So it could get interesting for the bubble horses in that respect, because I do think that the best horses this year and the Baffert's and the Brad Cox, right? I mean, Brad dominated the Breeders' Cup last year. Baffert's dominated the Triple Crown. They have the two dominant barns, and they've got numbers. And chances are they're going to take away a lot of the big numbers in these 100-point races.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It always is fun. The Derby Trail, Triple Crown Trail, great way to follow it. Again, countdowntothecrown.com. Pick up the package every Friday. There's other available information during the week as well. Go to horseplayernow.com and always – take a look at the Buzz Report today, looking at a little Louisiana Derby and Fairgrounds card. And Jeremy, as always, appreciate the visit. Fun conversation. We'll talk again. And I would assume in the next few weeks, maybe we'll pull you in for a little Keeneland, because you're going to be handicapping their cards again. And picks will be available on their website for the season again, right?
Yeah, looking forward to that. The association with Keeneland goes back to 2007, 2008. And talked with them last week about continuing it. So very much look forward to that. And all the action at Keeneland gets underway the first Friday of April.
All right, Jeremy, appreciate it. I will say go Sooners. Not if they end up meeting the Orange, but I'll root for you today. So go Sooners and appreciate the visit. And Jeremy, we'll talk again.
All right. Everybody be collegiate this time of year.
Absolutely. Jeremy Flank, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown, and much, much more. All right. I'm going to wrap it up, but I will hit you with promos before we do that. First there's the online knockout challenge today. Check the website for more information there, capitalotb.com. But the hoop shoot contest continues, and I know some people made a little dough yesterday on the hoop shoot contest in honor of the NCAA tournament. You can come down to the Clubhouse Racebook and watch all the basketball action, plus playing the horses, obviously. But during the afternoon, you put your name on the squares board. If you match a halftime or a final score, you get a chance to shoot for the money. That's this afternoon here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Tomorrow, there's a double promotion with a handicapping contest and a match bet promotion here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Again, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Don't forget, there's an Aqueduct track bonus as well. Tomorrow, check out the website for more information there. Let me also alert you that there is Thoroughbred racing available tonight here on the network, Capital OTB TV, and via CapitalOTBBet.com. So keep that in mind as well. Want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. During the championship meet, they're sponsoring some of the programming and events here at Capital OTB, and we absolutely appreciate their support. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America with some three-year-old talk, more specifically some fairgrounds talk. We talked to our colleagues, Brian Edo, at the top, and it sounds like weather-wise it's going to be okay. Not like a gorgeous day, not maybe sunny and 75, but it's going to be a nice day down there for a horse racing, certainly. They'll be on the grass. He did say check your track condition as far as the turf course. As they move into the day, because the last couple of days they were off the turf, But they'll be on the turf today down at the fairgrounds. But do check your course condition as far as that. But again, we checked in with Brian this morning just to get a live look at the fairground situation, and it looks like it's going to be a great day for racing down in New Orleans with a fantastic card. Don't forget, race 10 starts a late all-stakes pick 5 at the fairgrounds, race 11 an all-stakes pick 4. Those bets will both include the Derby and the Fairground Oaks. Really looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. And, of course, we'll be handicapping during the afternoon as well, because I'll be back in a couple hours probably with OTB Live for Saturday afternoon. So looking forward to it. We'll have some Aqueduct and Fairgrounds, obviously, in the mix and much, much more. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America. And as noted, we'll be back in a couple hours with OTB Live. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.